I was hoping, you know, we were enjoying it. What a feeling. So you think about that, a fixed line telephone, right? Progressive convention, and it grows over 100-something years.
And you got 1.2 billion users. A fixed cell phone invented essentially 20 years ago, and it's 2.6 billion users. And most people believe that that number is going to go to 4 billion, or two-thirds of the planet to carry a cell phone in the next 5 or 6 years. That's the impact that innovation has when you, okay, creative minds, make stuff easier to use, more convenient, and more useful, and people get connected up. Okay? That's the type of impact that goes on in this world. And so with all that said, can you take a look maybe over the next 10 or 15 years and start thinking about where can electronics or where can technology have its next really big impact? What I wouldn't rule out is that medical or life science is going to potentially be the next target. Think about the application of semiconductor shrinking devices, more performance, lower power, and starting to blend it in to the world of life sciences or medical and medical applications. That's the type of innovation space. The amount of the gross national product or GDP on a global basis that's spent on healthcare is going one direction. And technology will be brought to bear and to augment and to make life better and to make life more enjoyable. And that could range from things that we know today, like ultrasound machines that we want to make lighter and less costly so you can get them out of big cities and get them into smaller towns or villages or clinics. To where you have wearable devices that can monitor patient information instead of needing to go to the hospital to have information on a heart problem checked up, that information can be transmitted to the hospital. All the way to stuff that may border on science fiction. We're working with Team Gene USC on an artificial sight, okay, to where you could actually consider replacing the eye and the ability to see with technology. Artificial limbs with robotics and some of the things that can be done. That's the type of innovation that's in front of the people that are sitting in this room. So if you worry about the great stuff having already been invented, relax. Okay? It is a wide open world in front of you. It will only be limited, okay, by your creativity, by your energy, and by your passion of what you want to work on. And that to me is the most fascinating part that we face as a technology industry, because we really do control just how much work and how creative we can be on that front. Now, when I talk to groups that have a lot of students in them, you know, you get a lot of these questions of what's work like, or what will it be like after school, and where I'll go. And the one promise I can make you if you join a company like a TI or get in an industry like we're in is that you will never be bored, but you will probably be jet lagged. Okay? And I say that as an opportunity. And, you know, we've got, I think, even some of the TI sales folks are here, and they call on companies in the Austin area. But I guarantee they're up at night on telephone calls, and they're up early in the morning because the customers they call on have R&D locations in Taiwan or in China or in India. Our world runs 24/7. If you think about the last 50 years of technology, okay, mainframe all the way through the PC, it was primarily 2 billion consumers in the West, North America, Europe, and a handful of select economies in Asia. 2 billion consumers drove the majority of the technology industry for the past 50 years. Well, what's happening that's blowing away the world right now is you've got 3 billion additional consumers that have shown up essentially overnight. The economies of India, the economies of China, the economies of Russia, the economies of South America, the economies of other markets in Southeast Asia. 3 billion consumers showing up, ready to buy TVs, ready to buy cell phones, ready to buy and be entertained. And that is about technology. Our customers are global as they can get, okay, with R&D around the world. When we have people that get inside product groups, and you can come talk to any group you want, we will be traveling. We live traveling around the world. Our customers live traveling around the world. It makes it a lot of fun. there is always something exciting around the corner. There's also jet lag around most of these corners because that's the negative that comes with a lot of that travel. But I think you'll find it absolutely one of the best parts about this business is the exposure you'll get culturally and the different places you'll go and things you get to see on that front. Now, I touched on this whole concept to begin with of think of engineering work as a foundation, not just an occupation. And I encourage people as they're sitting in this room today to remember or to keep in mind there are many paths forward, okay, in terms of how you apply that knowledge, where you choose to go, and the options that you have. So as I said, some could be really great innovators, really great designers, really great architects at a system level, and have terrific impact on things. The work you will do, if you make that choice, will be nothing short of magic in the eyes of most people that watch and see what you do. Because you'll solve problems, you'll put them down into spaces, they'll have functionality that nobody could ever imagine possible being done. You will find yourself doing things and solving things and being told by people around you that, no, that's impossible, that can't be done. And that's usually the beginning of a great challenge to a great designer, to a great innovator. You can also find lawyers. Take a look at many of our patent lawyers, okay? Grounded engineering degrees. I try to get through introducing lawyers without making any lawyer jokes, and it's usually hard. But we'll make it through. Are there any lawyers in the room so I can find out? Maybe in a friendly audience. Salespeople. Majority of our salespeople that we hire, engineering degrees. I upset the head of engineering at Union College when I informed him I was going into sales, and he wanted to know why I was throwing away 4 years of education. Those options are in front of you. You look at the heads of our investors relation at TI, Georgia Tech, EE. Those are the paths that sit in front of people in this room. Don't worry about the options. Don't worry about the alternatives as you pursue your degree. They will open up in front of you. You'll have the choices that you can make as you navigate through that. I guess the other piece, and it borders more on the advice side, is make sure as you go forward and you're trying to make these, you know, you have people, oh, I've got to make this big career decision, and boy, what am I going to do for the next 50 years of my life? Well, first, you don't have to figure out 50 years, okay? And as you're making these choices or as you're navigating these paths, make sure you're having fun. Make sure you're doing something that you enjoy doing. Make sure that you're working on something that's hard and it's challenging. If you've already done it or it's something you're comfortable with, it's probably not going to be very exciting for very long. Okay? And then don't be afraid of a challenge. Don't be afraid that you will walk into something that you know very little about. I think people you would talk to professionally that had some of the most rewarding times was when they took on things that they really weren't too sure exactly how they were going to solve it or what the answer was going to be. The fact is, I love what I do. And it's not because I'm the CEO of Texas Instruments. I love what I do because I love the technology. I love the fact that I get to work around the world with really some of the brightest people I've ever met. And they're working on, literally, the coolest stuff in the world. And it is stuff that, you know, you see some of your customers and some of your people at TI doing, and you sit back and you are just, it's sheer amazement. That, you know, that to me looked like science fiction just a few years ago. And you've now got people figuring out how to solve that or be able to implement that. That's what makes the business fun for me. That's why I've enjoyed everything I've done over the years at TI, and why that time has really flown by that quick. Now, lastly, science and technology. I made a comment at the beginning that you guys really, in many ways, are blessed. You've got a great institution at the University of Texas in terms of the engineering and the capability of this place. It's not free. Okay, it's here because staff and administration invest and have a passion to make this stronger. We as a country, we as a company, we as a group we have to continue to invest in university research, university development, because that is where the great leaders of tomorrow are going to come from. It's where I believe the best ideas are going to come from. In order to have that, we also have to be investing in what's going on in K through 12. Because if we don't have people coming out of the lower levels of the school system with the appropriate math and science foundation, they're going to find that next step being even more of that challenging, and they won't select to go into it. I put those comments out not to just say we have work as a company, we have work as a country, but I encourage students in this audience to accept that you've got a responsibility as well, okay? You know, this famous statement of hug an engineer today. Find people that are making decisions back in high school. I don't care if it's friends, relative, family. Become an advocate of science and technology. Bring along the next group. You sit back in this room today and you look forward. Don't rule out that it isn't you up here talking in 10 or 15 years and you trying to make sure you've got the next group of great electrical engineering students getting ready to come out of school and to go on to graduate work. You can make a big difference by becoming an advocate for the profession. Let me stop at that point, open things up, and let people ask any questions they've got. I assume that's what Mary was talking about.
Try it. Is that good?
I can hear you.
Awesome. That's all that matters. You said that after you graduated, you went into sales. I think that's something
just
that...
Just don't tell too many people that.
Well, I think for the average engineering major, when they get out, you know, the path to an engineering job is sort of set out. But if you want to go into the world of sales, it's kind of murky and you don't really know what to do. Would you have some advice for someone who could be considering that option?
I was talking to some students earlier. The thing I did, and it's actually a program we continue to run today, and other companies I think do very similar things, is we will hire training team, graduate out of school, and we'll put them on a training or a sales associate program. Mm-hmm. And they'll probably spend a year and a half or 2 years rotate assignments inside of different product groups inside the company. Learn about different products, learn different people, understand what they're getting into, and I'll bet it's anywhere from 1 to 2 years they would then be out in sales. Gives you a broad brush view of the company quickly. And the thing that I found in some ways very beneficial about stepping into sales early was that you spend a lot of time in school with rules, laws, theorems, right answers, and wrong answers. And what you find out when you step into sales is you can be right and wrong. And if the customer doesn't think that he wants to buy from you, you're wrong. I don't care how technically rich you are with your answer. So it just tends to ground you very early on after a lot of years on the theoretical front. Clearly you have options like that in front of you.
My question is about the DLP. Kind of heard some stories that you guys went through about together going. Can you give some background about that?
I missed the last part, the stories of...
The DLP. That you guys went through a lot together out.
Okay. Yeah, that would be a mild understatement that we went through a lot with DLP out. For those in the room, DLP stands for Digital Light Processing. It goes by other code words of DMD, which was the deformable mirror device, and digital micromirror device. And if you actually look at it, I'm not sure if we get credit for being far-sighted and visionary or stubborn and slow, okay? But the original work by Larry Hornbeck, folks, really goes back to the mid to late 1970s. That's the part about being patient. Probably didn't really start applying the whole concept of tilting mirrors or manipulating mirrors to the world of projectors and TVs till 96, so probably some of the R&D work, 94, in terms of that. And, you know, it really is a case that sometimes innovation is before its time, or we hadn't figured out how to really turn it into a commercial product. Today, that business is approaching $1 billion a year. If you take a look at things like projectors for rooms like this, or TVs that you can buy, you'll find DLP in the middle of a growing percentage of all of that. And so it was a long road.